cliffcentral.com. Let's have our guest come in here and regale us with some of his fantastic stories. I love Harry. He's one of my favorite people. He has the most incredible life, spends a lot of time doing the things that the rest of us wish that we could do for a living. He actually does that for work. Hello, Mr. Sideropoulos. Have a seat wherever you want to sit down. You know, a lot of people don't know this, but Harry was actually the first voice on Cliff Central.
Yes, I was. How long ago was that?
It was 3 years ago, almost to the day. Yeah, can you believe that?
Good morning.
Look at you. You're looking very well.
I feel well. It's great. It's a Friday morning, and life's good.
I'm happy to hear it. How's your show going?
Well, we're in rehearsals. I've just got to remember my lines now.
And when does it start?
It starts next Wednesday.
Wow.
It starts next Wednesday, yeah.
This is quite a big deal.
It's a big deal. Do you know why? Because pretty much like what you did many 3 years ago is I decided that I had enough of producers and theatres.
Yes.
And I decided that I didn't like the way they did things. So I decided to open up my own space. But I didn't want to have a space from just, you know, from January to December. I only wanted when I worked. I'm Greek. I don't want to work that hard.
No, of course not.
And
that's so why your economy is intact. Greeks don't know what work is.
So
you want I have some olives. I eat them when I feel
tomorrow is another day.
Heavy sleep.
Yes. So I decided to, you know, to create this pop-up theater in Melrose, and I do it twice a year now. It started last year as a trial run, and it's going very, very well. So it's back now. It comes back again in October, November, and then I'm off to Greece again. So I now, 2 years ago, I started being based in Greece from December to
April.
What
a life this is. This is great. December to April.
That's the theater season in Europe.
And you work there as well?
I've just come back from America, so I use that as a base, and I've just come back from performing in Florida.
Could you ever imagine that this would have been your life?
No.
I mean, when you started out and you know, we all have a job and you're kind of just trying to pay the bills.
Yes.
And then you imagine that one day you'd be living this intercontinental...
It is amazing. No. Look, it's bloody hard work.
Yeah, of course.
But I love it. But I decided 2 years ago that I wanted, you know, I'm 43 now, and I went, now I'm having like a midlife crisis, and I decided to call it a midlife adventure. And I literally downscaled my life in Joburg, and I said, I want to experience living in Europe. And we're very fortunate. We've got a family home in Athens, and that helps. And I'm based there. And then all of a sudden, the whole world is, you have access to it. But most importantly, I just love, the fact that, you know, I can leave the theater at 11 o'clock, hop past 11, quarter to 12. And then there's like 1,000 bars and restaurants to go to.
Yes.
And no one is sitting there with their hands behind their backs going, I've got to catch a taxi.
And you don't have to, I mean, this is the nice thing about Europe, right? Is that everybody there is, they have a different time schedule to us.
Completely.
Like in Italy, I remember I went out for dinner in Venice. And I thought, well, it's 7 o'clock. It was like a ghost town.
Yeah.
No. And then at 9 o'clock, people start eating. At 11, 12, then they go out and drink.
They go out, and it's. I remember receiving a phone call at 1:30 one morning.
Yeah.
And they're going, Ella, Harry, you're not sleeping, huh? And it's like 1:30.
Yes, I'm sleeping.
And they're like, so after being away for 5 months, coming back, it is a culture shock because I'm used to there's chaos in my street downstairs. I mean, one of my best stories was there were three kids downstairs at like 4:30 in the morning, and they were making one hell of a racket because there's like, you know, there's benches downstairs, you know, like a little park. And I woke up to see what the hell was going on. And there were these three kids on a bench in the street. Yeah. The guy had just had sex for the first time, was obviously 18 or 19, and he was sharing the experience in graphic detail with his friends.
And you could hear this.
And I could hear this, and I thought, firstly, I went, how amazing that you can be on a street at 4 o'clock in the morning on a bench in a park, all right, and no one's going to kill you, A. All right, and B, I just loved that sense of, of course, at some point I opened the window and I went, you know, if you guys don't shut up, you know, I'm going to do what you just did, you know what I mean? So just, you know, keep it quiet. But I love that. I love the madness. I love the pace of Athens, and I love the fact that in the middle of the crisis, there's 110 theatres. That excludes kiddies theatres and that excludes music stages. It's a place where it's part of their DNA. Art is part of their DNA.
That's where theatre comes from.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? You Greeks, you were the ones who invented theatre. Drama. We invented
drama. My God, did we invent drama.
Yeah.
But, we've just got a little bit of a problem with our finances. But over and above that...
I was going to ask you about that because... When we think of Greece now, the most obvious story is this... what do they call it?
The austerity measures.
I was trying to think of the word. Yes. Austerity measures. What does this mean for the average Greek?
What does it mean for the average Greek? Nothing, actually.
They don't give a shit, right?
Can I tell you what it is? They're very tight. I mean, they're very. Some people have got, you know, two jobs or three jobs. But their attitude is, we screwed, so let's just keep 10 euros and let's go and have a cup of coffee with friends today. So they'll nurse that coffee for like 2 hours.
Yeah.
But they're going to go out, and that's what they do. So if the Germans were to arrive in Athens and go, but where is the crisis?
Where's this money?
Because everyone is outside. But that's why your cappuccino costs 7 euros.
Okay.
Because you're sitting on that chair in that restaurant, you know, for at least 2 hours. It's part of their DNA that they just... It's about, like, now everyone's on holiday. My favorite thing is that everyone gets ready for summer. Friends of mine have been sitting on the phone going, oh, it's so hot, I don't know how I'm going to get through the month. Oh, all of a sudden they're going, we're off to Mykonos for summer. And you think, huh?
Nice, that's fantastic.
Like, when I'm broke, I don't go to Bloom. You know what I mean?
No, exactly.
Yeah.
Tell me about your show. What is the show? Because it sounds to me like it's a hybrid of like Greek and Jewish.
It's a piece that was written because I have a huge relationship with the Jewish community, and I've got like so many Jewish friends.
Yeah.
And 25 years of Shabbat dinners.
Yeah.
And it's crazy what goes down. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And of course, it's two cultures that kind of collide.
Yeah.
And I decided that I wanted to write a play together with my friend Strato Kopteros, who's written a lot of other work that I've staged.
Yes.
That was fun. That was not stereotypical. All right.
Those stereotypes can be very funny.
They can be very, very funny. But it also has a lovely, there's also a warmth to it and a little message. But most importantly, it's the story of a Greek man who's experiencing Shabbat for the first time. And things just don't make sense. And of course, everything just goes pear-shaped because he doesn't understand half the things. He doesn't understand why they've got separate plates for separate meals. He doesn't understand why people, you know, and my God, he arrives hungry. And, you know, before you, because in a Greek home, when you get invited for dinner, right, you eat before you eat.
What a lot of food.
So, but in a Greek, in a Jewish home, it doesn't work like that.
No.
You've got to pray a lot.
You've got to wait for your food.
You have got to wait, yeah. And you've got to pray. So that was number one lesson in Shabbat.
And there's nothing worse in the universe than the gefilte fish. The rest is fantastic.
Yeah, but gefilte fish and herring. I mean, they come from a climate where, you know, herbs and spices, you know, and you give me gefilte fish and matzo ball soup.
Mm-hmm. So, matzo ball soup, sure, but the gefilte fish is disgusting.
So it's a lovely celebration of these two communities, but of course it's a piece that, you know, can resonate with anyone because it's a funny story of two cultures. You don't really have to know the cultures in order
now,
to appreciate
it. Now, the whole Megillah is it means everything, everybody.
Yes, it's like saying the full Monty in a way, but not that kind of full Monty.
Yeah.
And then a Shabbos Goy, which is what I am, is the person that attends.
The Gentile.
A Gentile, exactly, and is permitted
to do.
It's
a more polite word than yok.
It's a more polite word than yok, yes.
But you get the yid and the yok.
The yid and the yok.
We used to play a game. I don't know how I got away with it on 702, where we played a game. It was called Yid or Yok. And we'd take someone like Sarah Michelle Gellar, and we'd let people guess if she was a Yid or a York. And it was very offensive.
Back then, that was quite very progressive offensive. Back
yeah.
then.
Yeah, yeah.
That was very progressive.
Oh, did you ever hear the Hill Street Jews that I did?
No, I never did.
Oh.
Remember, I was on the other show.
That's true. So the Hill Street Jews were fantastic. I had the music and everything. And then these two Hasidic cops in New York would be hunting down their arch enemies, the blacks.
Oh, no.
This was... I got away with
you
this.
You got away with this back then.
Yeah.
That's we did... We used to get away with a lot of things back
and
then.
And then they'd crash into the blacks, and the blacks would get out of the car and go, yo, man, why you hit my brother in his ass? Now I have to steal a TV. And then the Jews would go, oi, but what about your friend? Aren't you worried about your friend? And he'd go, oh, I steal a TV for him, too.
Oh, my goodness. Very good. You know what I think is what I love about it is about the piece is that the Jewish community are great at laughing at themselves.
Yes.
And so are the Greeks, which I think is very, very important because the Germans are not very good at laughing at themselves. They're not.
Yeah, well, John Cleese tells this very funny story about how when he was in Monty Python, the Germans called him and said, this sense of humor thing, we are very interested in this. Serious story. He goes, will you be able to perhaps to teach us some more about this sense of humor? So he thought this was hysterical. So he, of course, boarded the plane immediately, flew in. The first thing they did was take him to a concentration camp to show him a Holocaust memorial. And he said, no, look, this is not humor.
Yes.
This is the other side.
Yes.
This is the opposite of humor. So the Germans, no sense of humor.
No sense of humor. And not great cuisine either. But it's a lot. Berlin's beautiful. Berlin is beautiful.
I'm going there next month. Well, this month.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic.
In a couple of days. So I must go to Berlin.
Berlin, beautiful.
Okay.
We'll be performing there next year. So I'm. You know what I did? I kind of woke up one morning, and after this trip now to Florida, which is called God's Waiting Room.
Is this Florida in the US or Florida in Joburg?
No. Florida. We've got to clarify that. Florida in the US.
Oh, okay.
I contacted, whilst I was there, various, organizations and theaters, and I thought, well, let's give it a try. It's a tour of this piece, the show. Which was the show that you were one of the first celebrities who came to watch it, who gave me the time of day all those years ago.
What, your show?
My show, No Sugar Candarel, Please.
Of course.
When everybody else was kind of going, oh, who's this guy? You were one of I'll never get in the front row.
The theater on the square.
So when I showed my portfolio of work to this theater in Florida, they went, oh, we want that show. And I went, oh, God, I don't want to do that show. It's so old. So we sat together with Gina Schmuckler, and who's the director, and we reworked it. I spoke with Sam because she had contributed towards the script as well.
Sam Cowan. Here a while ago. Yeah. She's the, you and she are still good friends.
And she does she's bloody funny.
She's hysterical.
The book is poignant but yet very, very funny. And I said, well, do you think it's gonna work? And she's, give it a try. And it was a screaming success. We retweaked a lot of stuff, of course, for a 21st century 2017 audience. And now that show is gonna tour next year.
Well done.
So it's so funny that it's like a full circle, from 2000, 18 years later, it's the show that started my career, is now going to tour internationally. So I'm very excited, and it's hard work, but I love it. I love it. I love what I do. I love the fact that I love the instability in my life.
I saw there was some controversy the other day you got involved in. There was some group of kids from Edenvale or whatever who...
were
anti-Semitic, and again, like you're a big friend of the Jewish community, and you wrote some piece on Facebook because I saw your Facebook. You were very pissed off. What happened?
Do you know what it is? I wasn't involved in the event. I just heard about it. I'm very fortunate in the sense that I have literally my friends of the United Nations. Okay, and I 2017, for God's sake, I can't handle bigotry on any level. You know, whether it's about homosexuality, about race, about religion, I get over it now. Yeah. You know,
move on.
But I also felt that it was important not just to scold people, but also to kind of show them some sort of guidance. So the thing is, very, very short, there was a play festival. A group of kids, the King David Victory Park, were staging The Boy in the Striped Pajama, which is a very dramatic piece about the Holocaust. And one of the characters obviously dressed in a Nazi outfit, and one of the kids in the wings or what have you started, chanted, Heil Hitler. All right. Yes, wrong. But they're also kids, which means that they say things because they don't really know. They don't, they want to be hip, they want to be cool. Absolutely wrong. And I needed to make a statement that these kind of things are not on. And you're not going to blame the parents or the school. Do you know what I mean?
Or victimize this poor child.
However,
they don't know what they're doing.
It's important for us adults, not only for kids, but children, but adults as well, to start a conversation. Only conversation shifts thoughts. And I remember sitting with a group of people that were going, these Muslims, really. And I went, what does that mean, these Muslims really? I was just talking, we were at a dinner party with a whole selection of people around us. And they went, well, they just bomb everywhere. And I went, no, my darling. There's a handful of terrible people that do that. It's a handful. All right? You know what I mean? It's the black's fault. For what?
Because
for God's
Amanda,
sake.
Amanda was telling me, she's our intern. Amanda was saying that Edenvale's a hotbed of Nazism. Is that correct? Amanda, do you want to corroborate the evidence on that one?
Starts with the nervous giggle.
No. A hotbed of Nazism?
No, that bad, Gareth. Come on. Never said that. I'm going to get kicked out of Edenvale.
Oh, okay. No, that's where you live, right?
where I live.
So it's not a hotbed of Nazism. Let's just clear that up. We don't want to upset anybody. On the line is the headmaster of Edenvale High. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Werden wir nicht vergessen.
Hello?
Aber wir werden auch die nicht vergessen, die den richtigen Weg einschlagen.
All right, thank you very
I'm
much.
I'm also shaking my head.
It's right, a breakfast show thing, I've realized. In my experience, too, I remember nodding my head many, many times, years and years
my
ago.
My neck will get tired.
But good for you for taking the opportunity to, instead of just telling the kid it's wrong, explaining why it's wrong. Like, we forget that history is also something that a lot of people are not aware of. Mm. You know, my grandfathers both fought in World War II, and my dad was the generation in between, so for them it was kind of more important. But every generation after that gets less and less important because it's some distant history.
And also we live in a world of pop culture, and we're surrounded by the bloody Kardashians, and that's what the world is interested
in.
Right. You know, so it's important to make those shifts and to educate. And education, you know, there's a lot of, you've got to educate the heart before you educate the mind. You know?
Yes.
And I know that that's all schmaltzy and Oprah Winfrey-like, but it is.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that.
You have to, you know.
You're looking at Oprah's biggest fan in the universe.
Nothing wrong with that.
You love Oprah.
He hid inside Gail once.
just crawled right up in there. Waited for the perfect moment.
Very good.
Sorry, Sue.
Inside Gail. I'm going to use that line. I'm going to find someone. I'm going to use it in one of my shows. That's fantastic.
Now, listen, is food such an important part of your life still? I mean, you're Greek, you can't help it, right?
Yeah, you
food
know what?
Food is just the biggest thing in the world.
Please, of course. You know what it is? I decided last year, just, you know what? I've always loved food, and I've always had a battle with the bulge, and ironically, isn't it so funny that I've come back to Canderel, no sugar Canderel, please, after all these years. Sure. So I've discovered swimming. Which I love tremendously, and
I was going to say you're looking in very good shape.
I'm in good shape. Yeah. I've lost weight last year. Unfortunately, I gained weight, and I decided I don't want to do this anymore. So over a very slow, long process, I've dropped about 20 kilos.
Jesus, well done.
It's not going to it's not going to happen overnight. No. It took me 20 years, but I have I've taken responsibility. You know, there's nothing worse than whinging overweight people. There isn't.
You're punishing yourself.
It's the one thing that you've got control over, and I fully understand the emotional stuff. Of course I do. But at some point you got to go, not on. Got to shift.
Yeah.
Okay. Take responsibility.
Yeah.
Be a grown-up boy.
Yeah.
You did this. Yes, the emotional, this one broke up with me, and this one did this to me.
And food is fantastic.
And it is, but what's even more fantastic is when you're eating the food to nourish you.
Okay.
And not to stuff you.
But Harry, I mean, listen, there are days I try to be disciplined about
you
this.
Haven't,
too.
By the way, I'm just going to say this. You have not aged a single bloody bit. You haven't gained a kilo since I've met you. You look identical. I want to vomit. It's true. Look at him.
You can projectile vomit in his face if you want to.
He doesn't have a wrinkle. He hasn't lost hair. How old are you now?
I will be turning 40 this year.
Oh, you bastard.
Yeah.
You bastard.
Huh?
Yeah.
It's old, though. Do you know how unhappy I am about this?
Are you unhappy?
You have no idea.
Are you kidding?
Harry.
I have never been happier.
It drives me.
Why?
First of all,
it hasn't physically aged
cold,
you. So it's
cold
not a,
sweat when I think about the fact that I'm so old.
No, but what I love about 43 is that we can't swear on the show.
Yeah, whatever you want.
There was something that I read which I loved, and it says, "You have no idea the immeasurable fuck I don't give." And that's the beauty of being 40 plus, is that you don't give a shit anymore. And apparently by the time you hit 60, oh my God, it's a feast.
Oh,
it's
really?
Like you just go in for the kill.
But there is a lot of truth to the fact that 60 now is what 40 used to be.
Yes.
I mean, we're living a lot longer and we're healthier for longer and all of that stuff. But to just get back to the kind of the age thing too, you reach a point as well where you realize, look, I'm not going to be a cover model. You know? And then you accept your body and you're like, this is what I got.
Yeah.
And I'm happy with it.
And you know, you will have your days where you're not happy with it. You know what I mean? Because like I look at you.
Sia.
All right. I mean, Sia.
Weighs 15 kilograms.
I don't know when last you ate. Okay. But I mean, I'm in the 90s. I'm envious of these bloody trousers. I love those stretch jeans that literally can show everything, that even what you ate last night. I love that look. But unfortunately, I can't use it. All right. I can't wear it. So you know what? You got to, going to Oprah. You got to love you with what you've got. Yeah.
All right. Preach,
and I'll tell you one thing. I've never had one overweight lover in my life. One.
Never.
Never. Not one.
Now, isn't that interesting? Because Alan Ford, we often comment on Alan Ford. We talk about him behind his back all the time. Alan Ford was here yesterday doing the Unview. And Mabali made the comment a couple of weeks ago. Yeah. Somehow, this guy just bats way out of his league. Mm. He brings in these good-looking guys.
He's dated models.
Now, how do you hit on? How do you even get out there and find this kind of talent?
My charm. Yeah. Bullshit, man. You know what it is? I've never gone on dating, you know.
But you are a very sophisticated man.
Yeah. So you know what it is? I'm dating somebody now, and they're living in Greece.
Hey, Lare.
Do you know what's great? It's because you're always in a coffee shop or you're in a tube station. So you're forever meeting people. It's not like in Joburg where you wake up into your car, into Sands, and back home again, maybe at the gym. So there were a lot more possibilities, and that's how it happened.
Okay.
So, and it's always
Greek.
Oh,
nice.
And thank God, a civil engineer, so we can have some money in this relationship. Oh. You know what I mean? I'm a bloody actor.
That's very good.
It's very good. I was like, tick. All right. But I've always dated people that I've met through friends. Or you know what I mean? At a dinner party or at a cocktail party. I've done certain things in my life that I'm not very proud of that kind of happened on the spur.
Don't we all?
But for the relationships, only through people, and that's how I've met. But
how long has this one been going on?
A year now.
That's
yeah, you
fair.
Go. It's
oh,
new.
Wow. Pretty good.
It's new. You know, which in gay world is the equivalent of 20 years. So.
you don't hear about those stories.
No, you don't.
Doesn't
is
last
he Greek
long.
Greek or staying in Greece?
Greek. No, Greek. And thank God, it's also got a summer house. Also important things. Oh. You know what I mean? You don't want to be in Athens stuck in the heat wave in August.
Oh, where are the marriage?
You know what I mean?
This is a keeper.
Fantastic. This is so exciting.
The amount of times I've had to sing that. And
Zorba.
Yes.
They ask you to do this?
Think, you know what? I do this corporate
What,
games.
South Africans?
South Africans. They go, let's break plates. There's Zorba. And you think, oh, God. And then I do it. And then I think if my friends in Greece saw this, they'd be like humiliated.
What's your name day?
So the name day, which is bigger than birthdays, is
it's a big thing for Greeks.
It's a big thing. It's your patron saint. So obviously we've got all these saints. We've got 1,000 saints.
There's so many.
Billions. So if you were Greek, there would be one for like St. Gareth, all right? And it's the day that the saint was either born or died.
Right.
And then what happens is your mother phones you and she goes, Harry, did you phone Costa today? Why must I phone Costa? To wish for his name day. But why? What? Yeah. All the Costa. Today the Constantine, St. Constantine C. die. Please phone because his mother phoned me to wish you for your name. Then I think
you phoned him.
You know what I mean? It's like it becomes this complicated. But at least with us Greeks, it's literally just a phone call. Hi, Costa, happy name day. With the Jews, it's an entire production. First night, second night, last night, fast, don't fast, repent. You know what I mean? Walk, eat matzah, don't. You know what I mean?
So when is yours?
I'm kind of here for that.
I've got three names. Yes, my sister just got Elizabeth, and I got Anargyros, Nektarios, Haralambos, which is where Harry comes from.
Haralambos, yeah.
Haralambos, Sidiropoulos. Anargyros means the man with no money, which is very apt because you're an actor.
Why would your parents
you
give
know
you
what
that
I mean?
Name?
Exactly.
What
right?
is wrong with them when they say I mean, that? The man
then
with
there's
no money.
Nektarios, which I like, because that's born under the nectar.
Ooh,
you
Nektario.
Know, Nektarios. And Haralambos is the happy kid. I think I'm happy.
Yeah, that's good.
And then Sidiropoulos means child of steel. So I have got, Anargyros is on the 1st of November, Nektarios is on the 7th of November, and Haralambos has got two dates. You can either celebrate it when he was born or when he died. Now, in South Africa, it means bugger all, but in Greece, it's big, and you get gifts. And you get gifts and dinner parties and all of that kind of stuff. I love it.
People are showering you.
The people are showering you. You shower them, depends what you're into. You do. It's a full, you know what I mean? It's
4 times.
Can I ask you about your sister, who is she's a genius.
Yes.
I mean, this is some woman. She has, she's an academic of repute.
Absolutely. I still don't understand what she does.
She's published papers about international relations and... I mean, a tremendously talented family.
She's just come back from Prague and Berlin. And you know what was so amazing? Many years ago, she did a talk, I think about 5 or 6 years ago, in Washington. Mm. And like, if this had happened to me, I'm not that I'm a big Facebooker. I mean, I fail our Facebook. I would have done banners. You know what I mean? Yeah. I would have paid for banners. Okay. Yeah.
She basically addressed...
She did a talk with Hillary Clinton.
That's right.
Oh, and I'm thinking, what? All right, so she's very humble with that kind of stuff, and she's taken. Yeah. It's, so she's this the national director of the Institute of International Affairs, and she's really taken it to the next level. What is it? It's a think tank. It's a research think tank, and she's done exceptionally well. At half the time, I don't understand the stuff she's writing. She goes, "Do you want to take a look at my thesis or my? We've done this talk, this briefing, and it's like 60 pages, and I like to think I'm clever, but I'm not clever.
I'm never going to get this.
I'm not that clever.
She's very smart. So
she's smart, and she's also doing great work in a world that is a very male-dominated world, you know? Unfortunately, we still have that stigma globally.
So what do you think of globally? I mean, we've got, in Europe at the moment, there's a lot going on. There's a lot of time there. I mean, the French have...
oh, my God.
They just chose this Macron guy. We've got Angela Merkel hanging in by a thread.
When the world gets scared, they become very conservative. And that is, you see that globally, politically. Unfortunately, in Greece, we have a neo-Nazi party. We've got three seats in parliament because 460,000 Greeks voted for that. Mm. So you're starting to see globally, out of fear, it's the same thing that happened in America. We don't want the Muslims, we don't want these, we don't want the black guys, just white. So it goes to conservative. And through that is born all these religious or fundamental groups. And you don't have to be fundamental by, you know, blowing people up. You could be fundamental in your thought preaching at a church. Mm. Okay. So I think that we're not in a great space globally. And I think it's quite upsetting because I've flown with Muslim friends. And I've gone through and I'm sitting waiting for them.
And they get the whole body cavity search.
They get the whole body cavity search. So I think it's fear. It's fear and ignorance. And I can't believe that, you know, 40 years later, there was, you know, racism in America and we had apartheid, and yet people still think that way. And they do. And
it's disappointing when you meet people like that. It feels almost like you've been dragged back in time, right?
I feel that we are, we still feel like white male supremacy globally. That's what is happening everywhere. That's why that horrible woman, what was her name in France?
Marine Le Pen.
All right. And she's there with all this vitriol.
Yeah.
Vitriol. So, yes, beautiful place to... that's why I love living in Greece for those 5 months. It's fabulous. It's great. And then just when I'm about to hit them over the head with something really hard, like a couch, it's time for me to come home. Because you know what? We do have something really special in South Africa. Well, all our shit.
Yeah.
I mean,
What is that special thing?
There is and I say this word very carefully because some people might misconstrue it. We are beautifully naive still. If that makes any sense, we know. I'm not saying that we're not streetwise, but we don't have that edge that Europeans have. You see people that are struggling to make ends meet, and I see them in the morning, and you know they're in the shopping center, and they greet you, and there's a joy, and there's a even in their misery, all right, and in their hardship, we're a lot more approachable, except when we drive. Joe Burgers must just not the worst people when we drive.
But apart from being on the road.
Apart from being on the road. Pleasant. There is still that sense of Ubuntu, and specifically Joe, but Cape Town, Cape Town is a special place. You know, great cinematography should cast. But I'm sorry. You know what? I make friends so easily. I go to Cape Town and my only friends are either from Joburg or from other parts of the world. They're very clicky. They're very clicky. They're very clicky. So they got the money. Yeah, we'll come and they never come.
No, never. You can never invite Cape Townians to anything because they don't pitch.
They don't pitch, and they're too busy being perfect, and you know, they all look like the Rama advert. Remember those Rama adverts? I mean, you're too young, but from like the 80s and the 90s of this happy family jumping on a trampoline, and they're in slow-mo, and then the mother comes out with like white government bread, you know what I mean, and puts like Rama mag, you know, and it's all good for you, and it's good for cholesterol, and they all look perfect, and they all look like they're Michael Moll siblings. That's, you know what I mean? That's Cape Townians.
Do you think that South Africans, we're overly obsessed with what goes on politically, and we let it kind of define, because the Greeks, you guys have gone through so much shit in Greece, but you don't let it weigh you down necessarily. You were saying earlier, people go out, they have they live their lives.
I think we're also very complacent in South Africa. We just think, oh, the next person's going to do it. They're going to go and march. So we are a lot more complacent. I think as compared to other parts of the world, where they will literally go. I mean, what they did in Brazil. I mean, it was all great what happened here with the march, but I mean, it was like, it was a joke size wise.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Compared to, you know, let's mobilize. So we love complaining, but we don't like doing something about it. And it's always them. It's someone else is going to do something. And we live in our little palaces. That's, I mean, when I say we, the you know, the those who are very fortunate enough to have a roof over their head, food, and money.
And there's definitely like two South Africans, which...
There's like many South Africans. Yeah, and I think, unfortunately, I realize when one has a conversation over dinner with, you know, when you're invited to a friend and you don't know all their friends, you start really realizing that we're not as all, you know, rainbow nation as we want to. Sure. You know, we're not. Mm. So, and it's okay. You know what I mean? It's like, it's okay. As long as you don't, as long as there's no racism and bigotry and all of that stuff, if you want to believe what you want to believe, that's fine. I'll believe what I want to believe. And you know what? We can't be this melting pot. You see, Americans are a melting pot. I met many Portuguese and Italian and French whilst I was in America. They're first Americans.
Yeah.
Then they are, you know, everything else. In South Africa, we're not a melting pot. We are Khoza, we are Zulu, we are Greek, we're Italian, we are Irish. We're, and, you know, and then we use this banner of the new South Africa on Heritage Day, and we have a braai, you know, and then what? You're like stupid. Stupid, like completely stupid.
Can we go back to the play for a second? Because there's some stuff I want to ask you.
Yes.
So you're rehearsing at the moment for the show.
Yes.
Okay. And when you rehearse, are you? How do you learn your lines? Because this is something I can't. I could never
do. It kills me.
How do you do it?
Repetition, repetition, walking around in a circle. I've got to walk in a circle.
I had to make a 12-minute speech 2 years ago in London.
Yeah.
I memorized this goddamn thing. I would go over it and over it and over it again. Get on stage, forget the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. It's happened.
Disaster.
And when it's a one-man show, it's harder because you don't have anyone to bounce off.
The pressure.
It is. It's
from someone else.
A cue from somebody else to go, hi, so what time are we leaving? And you go, okay, that's what I need to say. Now you're by yourself and the audience looks at you and you've got to look completely calm. You know how many times I have blacked out where I go, oh my, it's like 4 seconds, but it feels...
What's the process though? Do you walk around the garden with the script in your hand?
I walk around my table, my dining room. I keep walking around.
Go around and around
and around and around and around. And then I read this amazing book by Sir Laurence Olivier many years ago, and he said when he was having difficulty learning Shakespeare... Because let's face it, I'm not learning Shakespeare. But when he was learning Shakespeare and he couldn't remember the lines, he repeated every line 5 times. And then after he repeated it 5 times back to back, he would then take the line previously and go into that line, into the new line that he was learning. So it is a lengthy process. You don't ever find an easy way of doing it. I was watching Celine Dion's concert some years ago on TV, and there was an interview, and she said, you know, I have somebody, you know, who constantly, you know, recites the lines to me. And I'm thinking, oh, you know, it's lovely when you have budget.
Diva.
Wait, you know. She has someone
in her ears. Her brother, her late brother who passed away, that was his job.
Oh.
He would sit there with a book.
Well,
and
also, it's sheltered employment for her brother.
Sure, you're telling me. I mean, she's like, I mean, how many are there? 16 of them.
Benoit, I need you to help me with these lines. It gives him something to do.
Like all 16 kids are, she's they're on her payroll.
Yeah, of course. Sheltered employment.
Sure, completely.
She's like Louis Late. Celine Dion. Didn't she lose her husband recently?
When did he die?
Brother, I think about
last year.
Mm.
Yeah.
René.
Last year.
Wasn't there a footage of him groping some chick in a lift?
No.
Yes.
I don't know. I don't follow. Do you know what it is? Of course, they're big stars, so of course they've got to interview them, but it's like, they sit there and they go, Celine, how are you? With this pensive look, and she goes, you know, since René died... I've been feeling it's going to be okay. And you think, you know what?
That is so accurate.
All right, like you think, you're like there are other people who are going through like bombs in Kabul. You know what I mean?
No, René dying
you
2 years
know what I mean?
Ago.
Don't get me wrong. It's your reality. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But we are living in this pop culture that drives me crazy because we're so obsessed with...
What do you do when you... Again, I'm sorry to go back to this play thing, but I'm fascinated. I can't imagine... Anything more frustrating than you're on the stage, it's a one-man show, and you forget your line. What do you even do?
I either have there's certain areas on the script, on the stage, where like I know that there's certain problem areas in the script, and like I'll have a keyword that will literally, you know, that will cue me. But sometimes getting to that word or to checking something that's on your phone, because there's in the scene, there's a scene with a phone, you can't just pop it up and it look natural. Oof. So there's a great sense of panic. I'm not going to lie. There is a great sense of panic as you are supposedly giggling and doing a pensive pause. There's a great sense of panic. And I thought that the older I'd get, I'd master it, and I haven't. It takes me longer to learn the lines, and it takes me longer to learn the lines. So there's like, now I leave from here, off to a studio to record, then 4 hours of learning lines before rehearsals kick in.
But I guess in the same breath, that's also what a lot of people say is their big love for theatre, that it keeps them on their toes. You don't have 7 takes. You are there every single night.
And
you have to give it your
best. And I think that's why not that if I got an opportunity to work in film, I'd say no, but I haven't chased film because I love the concept of live. I started like with you in live radio, all right? Mm. And I love that live, that I'm making up this word, the liveness of something. You get one chance to build it up. I remember there were days when we did a show, we had planned it, and then all of a sudden something happened in the news, bang, the whole thing gone. Same thing with theatre is that, and you feed off that energy. So seeing people laughing or seeing people crying, depending on what show you're doing, is an amazing gift for an actor. We don't save lives, for God's sake. We make people forget their reality for a couple of hours. So this kind of inflated adoration that we give to all these public figures, I mean, of course, yes, they get you through your difficult time. But for me, it's a job. It's another job. It's another job. And
are you ever bored on stage?
No, never.
It's impossible, right? Because you're so stimulated.
Yeah. Do you know what somebody said to me? They said, when you get bored with this,
what happened is
I've always got nerves before the show.
That's a good thing, right?
And I was panicked, and many years ago, somebody said to me, I can't remember, they went, nerves are the respect that we as actors pay the audience.
Oh, wow.
And which is such a lovely thing.
That's a hell of a way to look at it.
Yeah. But I think for me, the biggest panic is not, are they going to like me? Am I going to fucking remember the words? That's my biggest
angst. All you're worried about. That's all I'm worried about. The whole time.
And then am I going to remember the words and know where I've got to be on the stage? Because this stage, because it's a pop-up, I specifically wanted to create a very different... The whole idea behind it is that every show has a completely different interior. So we've taken this hall, this old hall, on literally next to the Killarney Country Club, and we've converted it into a pop-up theatre, all right? Full theatre stage, everything. But the whole Magilla is designed, the stage, like a modeling ramp.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So it means, so you're performing on three sides, which means that you have got to constantly be shifting so that no one in the audience ever feels that they can't see you.
You're back to them, right? You don't care.
So
yeah,
that stress is quite big because you're performing in the round.
Right.
And they're very close. They're right up. I mean, they're very, very close to you. So there's no space. Like when you have the distance, you can get away with stuff. This is a very intimate. It's 250 people, but it feels like you're performing to 20. It's very close. It's a very intimate space.
I like that because then you can actually see their expressions on their faces.
Which is a good thing and a bad thing.
Well, yeah. Look, I mean, you get laughs, so for you it's a good thing. But
They fall asleep, which has happened.
Does that
times.
Happen?
Yes, it's happened.
Now, how do you focus on that person? Because I imagine, this is how I feel anyway, I could get 10 emails from someone, from 10 different people in a morning, and they could say, oh, we love your show. And then there'll be one email, complete prick, and I hope horrible things happen to
absolutely.
You. And that's the one I'll remember, and I'll fixate. You fixate on it, right?
Yes, because what did I do that made me, made John not like me?
If someone comes to your show and they fall asleep, do you fixate on them?
I do, and it's hard, especially if they're in the front row. I do fixate, I do. And the one was snoring as well, the one in America, they were snoring, all right? And he obviously was dragged there by his wife. I mean, didn't want to be there. And I thought, best you sleep rather than die, because, I mean, he was at least 98. I didn't think he was going to make it to the show. So it was a good thing.
The snoring made you, at least you could tell you know,
I thought,
alive.
Like, he's still alive. But I think it upsets me when people I've read, especially now with social media, it's you're in the theatre backstage putting on your makeup and you're getting beep, 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 beep. Oh my God, I'm so excited. I'm in Harry's new show. Oh, blah, blah, blah. Or like, oh, I can't believe I've been dragged here. And it's terrible because I don't read stuff.
I can't believe I've been dragged here. Those people should really just...
Well, they do. Yeah, you know, they do.
I went to ballet twice and it was enough forever.
Yes.
I never need... I never need... I know it's not for me.
Yeah, and that's okay.
So don't go because you upset everybody else by snoring in the front row.
Yeah, yeah.
No, like fashion shows. I can't do those either.
I can't do fashion shows.
Yes.
And also, you know what? Can I just be, can we just have a moment here? All right. Like, we're in Joburg. Yeah. We're in South Africa.
Yeah.
We're in the pimple end of nowhere. All right. With all due respect.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, you know what? When we kind of do all this red carpet shit where you've like, you phoned the media people to photograph you, you know what I mean? On this red carpet where people are walking by and they're going, who the fuck are you? Is I'm sorry. It's like, it's so ridiculous.
Even at the Summers this weekend, oh, I mean, there were people falling on the red carpet that we've never heard of before.
You never heard of them. Never heard of them. But we're wanting to emulate the rest of the world, and the whole world does that as well. The only difference is that in places like Greece, they truly, truly have a star system. So those stars
are huge.
Well, yes,
but the last major Greek star, let's think about it.
No. I'm talking about in Greece.
Let's talk about Greek stars, because they come out to South Africa every now and then, perform at Caesars or whatever.
Oh, of course they do.
So the last one I heard of was Notis Vakanakis.
Yes, he's such a chop.
Wait, that's a real
Noti
person.
Svakanakis.
Noti.
You know Noti Svakanakis? Yes. And then who's the woman? She's been out here before.
Anna Visi.
But she's great.
She's great.
What
she's
a voice.
Huge. And they all perform Glow International.
But the Greeks support the Greeks.
Yeah.
That's good.
They support the pop concerts.
They're not coming to your shows?
They come. You know, they do. But yeah, you got to kind of coax them.
Isn't there a community WhatsApp group?
You're right. There should be one.
I thought you guys had a group.
No, we don't. But the Jews do. They've got Joburg Jewish mommies.
Really?
And it's like 5,000 people, and it's like the Wikipedia for Jewish moms.
On WhatsApp.
Not on WhatsApp, sorry, on Facebook. And they'll hi, guys, Boba coming over for the weekend. I need a good Shabbos meal recipe. Help. Or, guys, does anybody know about Trustworthy Gardener, but he must be trustworthy. You know what I mean? Like, highlight it. You know what I mean? It's amazing. And they do amazing work. So, I mean, yes, and they've got a great sense of humor, because we took the mickey out of them last year, and they really jumped on board, and they were amazing.
You know, I love seeing that, because a lot of people are, I think, jealous of the fact that there's such a close-knit community, and particularly with Jewish Joburg people.
They're amazing.
And the Greeks, to a lesser degree,
but the
Portuguese, there are different little communities in South Africa, and they kind of stick together and they help each other out.
They do.
But it's such a happy and positive thing. It's not a let's exclude other people.
No, never.
It's a let's all try and make things better.
Yeah. And we might have different religious beliefs, but we feel that you have something worthy that we want you to share with our community. And that's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. So, and this is the point of just generally with this specific show as well, is that there's a lot more that unites than divides us, you know. So at the end of the day, we all kind of want the same thing. We all want to be loved. We all want to have a community. We all want to have a home. We all just want to be okay and live an okay life. You know what I mean? Everything else is, you know, is the filigree. We all want that. So, like, now you've got a Yami, you've got a Kalabaya on your head, and you wearing, like, I don't know, whatever. We all kind of want the same thing.
What's a Kalabaya?
It's those big kaftans.
Oh, is that what it is? Mm. Who wears those?
Well, the Middle Eastern people.
Oh, okay.
And I wear them in the summer.
Is that not called a muumuu?
I don't know what a muumuu is. What is a muumuu?
Isn't a muumuu
a muumuu like, feels like something that belongs to the
I've
world.
I've heard of a hijab.
No, muumuu is a, it's a thing. It's like a kaftan type
M-U,
thing.
M-U?
M-M-U. M-M-M-M-M-M-M-M-M-M-M-M-M-M-M-M-M-M-M-M-M-M.
Does that belong to the family
up,
of
see.
Onesies?
I'm not making it up. No, this is a real thing. Did you see those things that they put on Facebook?
No, what things?
Rompers for men. Have you seen these?
Oh, I'm all for that life.
What rompers for men? I haven't seen it. What is it?
Okay, so it's like a two-piece situation.
A two-piece situation.
But
you wear it under your clothes.
No. Like, it's the latest summer trend in the US right now for men. So think silk pajamas.
Yes.
But it's now all together. So it's like a onesie.
Oh my, and silk pajamas means that everything is revealed.
Well, I didn't think of it that way.
I mean, it is.
That's a little...
I've worn silk, and let me tell you, he didn't look the same as me as he did on Michael Caine, you know, 20 years ago.
Your kibbles and bits flapping around.
But have you seen what a muumuu is yet?
No, I'm not getting it. Double M-U space double M-U.
Yeah, moo dash moo.
Are you a onesie man?
No.
I'm a huge onesie man.
You like onesies?
Love onesies.
Okay, because I was going to ask you, now it's winter, are you still swimming every day?
Yes, in the heated pool.
Swim in the winter?
Yeah, in the heated pool. I mean, don't be silly. I'm not Russian. I don't go outside. It's like it's a heated pool. Like, you know,
what at the gym?
Shame, you're at the gym. Okay. You know, people go, shame, you're swimming. And I go, guys, it's a luxurious gym with a heated pool.
And
I'm fine.
And then you get out of the pool into a onesie.
No, look at that. Into a onesie. No. A onesie is for home. It's for home. I have a zebra onesie. I know.
Really?
Yeah, my friends in Greece saw it, and they kind of went, this is. I said, don't you guys have onesies? They go, never. I said, no one. She says, the last time you wear a onesie is when you're two.
And they won't wear Crocs.
Won't wear Crocs, no. And I've got Crocs because, you know what, they're comfortable. At 43, you also start thinking of comfort on every level. When I travel, when I want to have you. And
they're going to shoot me in the head when I start wearing Crocs, really.
But the new Crocs have got new designer. But have you seen them?
Harry.
They've just got the name Crocs.
They look like they're
no,
like
guys,
orthopedic.
They look
nice. No.
They're not
it's
orthopedic.
Like what, it's like what those kids, remember those kids who had polio? They used to wear those
legs. Oh, no, you're terrible.
The leg irons. No. the Crocs are one step away from leg irons, I'm telling you.
I'm a Croc man. And there's a couple of things that I'm not embarrassed to admit. One, I love Crocs. B, I love ABBA, and I'm not apologizing for it. And C,
Ben
I love Dolly Parton.
Ben.
I love Dolly Parton.
Ah. Ben
yes,
loves
Jolene,
yes.
Are you kidding me?
Yes.
I love that.
Okay. What's the best there. Dolly Parton song? Is it Jolene?
I think it's Jolene. Jolene. And of course, Islands in the Stream.
That's a classic.
Islands in the Stream.
Absolutely.
I mean, and she still looks fabulous. I mean, her boobs still inflated. Her waistline is like the size of a napkin ring.
Well, she's still hung up in the
right
way.
Here's the greatest Dolly. Here's the greatest Dolly song of all right? You ready?
Can you hear it?
My next guest was an American Idol. Long
this is Carrie Underwood introducing her, but here she is.
I've been a fan of hers ever since I was a little girl. And
what a great song. She sings it with Carrie in this piece, so it's worth listening. I'm so glad you're a Dolly fan.
I love Dolly.
It would be the What's incomparable Dolly Parton.
Woohoo!
Have you ever seen her in concert?
Never live, only on YouTube.
Listen to Dolly.
Hey, thanks.
Those big tits.
Here you come.
Of course.
Just when I've begun to get myself together, you walk right in the door, just like you've done before, and you wrap my heart round your little finger. Here you come again.
I love this.
Isn't that sweet?
I love
this woman.
She makes
She's
me
gorgeous.
Happy, man.
So you
she
like makes... ABBA and Dolly? And what other embarrassing things? Crocs?
Crocs.
Admit all the embarrassing things.
I have this thing where when I'm thirsty, I know it sounds terrible, I have this thing. When I'm thirsty, and I love water, I drink a lot of water during the day.
Why have we not offered Harry water?
Yes, you should. Somebody should be offering
Amanda,
me.
Please. You know.
But if you have instant coffee, no. So I have this thing where I like drinking water, but I don't want to interrupt the flow of water. Uh-huh. And you know, and usually a normal standard glass is not big enough. So I drink out of, sometimes when I'm that thirsty, especially after gym.
You drink out of what?
What? If you repeat this to anybody, I will deny it vehemently. Out of a salad bowl.
Like a dog.
Not like that. I don't lap
like
it up.
Like a dog.
Like a pickle up.
He goes down on his knees.
Like a sacrifice to the gods. You know, you're drinking
their
blood.
Wow. So you gulp down the whole bowl.
I gulp it down. Like
wow.
And of course, one of my friends, the one time I said, and I want it in a big glass. She bought me a vase. She literally
and you
bought
love
me.
That.
She was still laughing.
So you, I'm imagining this. What a scene. I see Harry stumbling around his house while ABBA's playing in a onesie with Crocs on and a giant salad bowl of water that he drinks. I mean, what a fucking disgrace you are.
That is, no, I'm actually quite impressed because, you know, most of us need to take a break so we can breathe. So you clearly, like, you could hold your breath for... God knows how long.
Now I'm picturing him in the garden as he's rehearsing.
Can you knock back
lines?
That whole bottle of water now?
No.
Yeah, well.
Well, I can.
Let's do a little, here's a game.
Okay, but it's very cold because that's the other thing that I do is that it's going to be out of the fridge for 10 minutes at
you
least.
Like room temperature?
No, just above room temperature.
Bring room temperature.
You know, just above. If you give me a broom because this gives me a brain freeze.
Give me the cold one.
You take the cold
there's,
one.
There's room
I'll
temperature.
I'll do the other one.
So probably while you're learning your lines in the garden, you look at the bird bath and you go,
I know, I mean, ooh, I should be embarrassed about it, but again, it's the joys of being 43. You don't give a shit.
You really
just go, yeah.
How are you going to be when you're 60?
Oh my God, I'm going to be terrible. You know that it's the beginning of the end when you start conversations in the restaurant and you go, I was watching on CNN yesterday, A. B, when you've asked them to please shut the door because there's a draft. Oh. And C, when you've asked the manager to lower the background music.
Oh.
That's when you know it's the beginning of the end.
No,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
All right.
Where's the room temperature?
No, we're going to get you a whole bottle of water. This is our Aqua Vita water. They They've sponsored us from the beginning. These people are terrific.
Fantastic.
It's pure. It's great water. It's very, very safe to drink. You don't have to worry. It's not like Cape Town, where at the moment they're busy because there's so little water there that the water that they're drinking from the taps is basically just fish shit.
Yes, I'm sure.
Horrible.
What are we thinking about Cape Townians right now as we're about to do a water drink?
Shame. Well, we're going to show off. We're going to show them how much water
we have.
We're
going to show them what it looks like when you have water.
Yeah. We'll film this and we'll make a YouTube video and they can all watch it and get jealous.
Oi, oi, oi. All right.
What kind of reception do you think that this show of yours is going to get here in South Africa?
As I said, we did a trial run last year and it was amazing. It was fantastic. So I think also because it's a very, you know, with all my shows, there's singing, there's dancing. There's an amazing slow motion sequence that kills. I mean, it is.
Slow motion sequence where
yes,
you are
live on stage.
Falling or yes, running.
Trying to get away. From a Friday night dinner. So there's physical acting, there's comedy, there's song, and there's craziness, and I poke fun, but we laugh together. I'm not offensive in any way. It's not like
We need some liners from you while you're here. So
must I do liners?
Yeah, do just these four for me quickly because we're going to need these. When, yeah, and so, I'd rather, you know, we're not going to waste your time after.
No, that's
show.
Fine.
All right.
Must I mention the Gareth Cliff Show or
well,
just
it's
the
all
lineup?
In as, okay, it, so, as it is, go.
So, the Gareth Cliff Show, a radio show so delightful that you'll want to introduce it to your mother or maybe even let it knock you up.
All right, that's good. Next one.
The Gareth Cliff Show. Not quite as much fun as a prostitute, but certainly cheaper and something you can tell your wife about.
That's good. Next one, go on.
All right.
It's only four.
Much like there is no place for us.
Come on. Keep it together, Harry. You're a professional. You're our show announcer.
All right. Much like there is no place for a small cock in a pub. I believe you're making me do this.
Very serious.
I'm doing this under duress. I got my car keys. Much like there is no place for a small cock in a porno, there is no place for shitty radio in your ears. The Gareth Cliff Show, live on cliffcentral.com and the Cliff Central app, Monday to Friday, 6 to 9 a.m.
Right, and the last one.
Hello, my name is Harry Sideropoulos.
You bastard. You bastard.
Go on. This is the best one.
It took me like 20 years to get this guy to finally like me after what I did on The Rude Awakening.
Go on.
Hello. How's it? My name is Harry Sideropoulos, a fabulous hybrid of Barry Ronger and the late George Michael. You listening to the Gareth Cliff Show on Cliff Central. Very well done to you. L'chaim.
Yay! All right, it's time for a game, everybody. Here he is, Harry Sideropoulos, about to down a bottle of water in one fell swoop, like a greedy gluttonous animal.
All right.
No salad bowl.
No salad. You should give me a salad bowl. All right, tell me when I can go.
All right. And
you must tell me how long it's going to take.
Okay, are you going to time him?
Okay, hang on. I just got to put on my lips. Hang on.
Oh, yes, please.
Okay.
And go. Look at him. He's almost there. He's almost there. It's bubbling the last little bit. Wow.
Ow.
It's spectacular.
Oh, my gosh.
Spectacular.
Oh,
isn't this a stupid show?
Oh, my God.
This is the most stupid
show. I love it because I come here and I'm able to elevate the standard, which I think is great.
You've taken up some. Our listeners have left. You've made it too intellectual.
That was 10 seconds.
You must see me on a first date, yeah. This is going pear-shaped. I think it's time to go pear-shaped.
Here is Michelle. She says, hey, Harry, F you, I'm 43 and I do not own Crocs.
Okay.
And other people saying that they just love you. Somebody says here that every single show you have ever done has made them laugh for days and days after
bless
they
them,
saw
man.
It.
Thank
How's
you.
How's that, huh?
Thank you, thank you, thank you,
Some
guys.
Very, very complimentary people here. They love what you're doing.
Thank you.
By the way, a little later on today, we've got the sex show with John T. Searle, which is filthy and disgusting. And then after that, Casper De Vries with the Casper radio show. But also, right after 9, Dave Levinson is here with the it's just appalling. He's got a bunch of comedians here with him. None of them are matriculated. None of them None of them can find real employment. It's just... this is... I've become a halfway house for unemployed comedians. It's very disappointing. Oh, and Harry Sideropoulos, what an absolute pleasure and a treat.
Oh, my friend, it's always
today.
A pleasure. Thank you so much for having me here. Guys, like in meeting you all.
You Thank must you. Go to Harry's show. Let me give you the details of this in case you haven't been paying attention. In June, that's this month, the award-winning actor and comedian Harry Sideropoulos is back in South Africa and restaging his hit show from last year, The Whole Megillah, the Gunzer Megillah.
That's the one.
The Whole Mishpocha. It's all happening. The oys and joys of being a good Greek Shabbos goy.
That's
and
the one.
And the new season has been sprinkled with the latest hilarious scenes and some fresh adaptations from the original script. The show will be staged at his pop-up theater in Melrose Estate from the 7th of June until the 18th of June. If you miss this, there are only 7 performances. Now, don't fuck around. If you miss out on Harry's show, you're going to be angry, you're going to be depressed, you're going to be, it's cold, it's winter in Joburg, yeah. Those miserable, miserable sunsets on a Sunday when Carte Blanche music comes on. Your life is going to be horrible if you don't go and pepper it with something decent, and Harry's got the antidote to all of that nastiness.
Thank you.
There we
thank
are.
You, thank you, thank
get
you,
on,
thank you.
Get on your bicycle, your... Get off your backside, get along to Harry's show.
And right. They can book on quicket.co.za. It's very easy.
Quicket?
Yeah, quicket.co.za.
Q-U-I-C-K-E-T.
Mm. Yeah, that's all it.
Right. I've never heard of this before.
They're amazing.
Is this a sideline business?
No, don't be silly. What do I know about technology? Oh. It's the most user-friendly. It's amazing. It's actually
sure?
a Cape Town-based company.
Oh. Yeah. Okay, so it's a real thing.
No, it's a real thing. It's a real thing.
You're not taking the piss here.
No, no, it's called
we've
Quicket.
Stopped with the comedy.
No, we've stopped with the comedy. No, I'm serious.
It's called Quicket.
The minute we started with these voiceovers, we upped the notch and we went to something very classy. And
Harry, we love you. Congratulations on another terrific show. I hope it's a sellout.
Thank you.
And
thanks, my friend.
Come and see us again soon. CliffCentral.com